Cody was watching over us. Megan and I were the two newest members of the team. If anyone could use coaching, it would be us. Megan carried our pack on her back, filled with the things we'd need for the infiltration. She had out a handgun, which honestly would be more useful in close quarters than my rifle.
Ready?
She asked. I nodded.
How much improvising do I have to be ready for from you today?
She asked.
Only as much as needed,
I grumbled, raising my hand to the wall.
If I knew when it would be needed, it wouldn't be improvising, would it? It would be planning.
She chuckled.
A foreign concept to you.
Foreign? Did you not see all the notebooks of plans I brought to the team? You know, the ones we all almost died retrieving? She turned away, not looking at me, and her posture grew stiff.
Sparking woman, I thought. Try making some sense for once.
I shook my head, placing my hand against the wall. One of the reasons that the city stations were considered impregnable was because of the security. Cameras in all of the hallways and stairwells. I had thought we'd hack into security and change the camera feeds. Prof said we'd certainly hack the feeds to watch them, but changing those feeds to cover sneaking rarely worked as well as it did in the old movies. Steelheart didn't hire stupid security officers, and they'd notice if their video looped. Besides, soldiers patrolled the hallways. However, there was a much simpler way to make sure we weren't seen. We just had to stay out of the hallways. There weren't cameras in most of the rooms, as the research and experiments done there were kept secret, even from the security watching the building. Besides, logically, if you kept really close watch on all the hallways, you could catch intruders. How else would people move from room to room? I raised my hand and, with some concentration, vaporized a 4-foot-wide hole in the wall. I glanced through it, shining my mobile. I'd ruined some computer equipment on the wall, and I had to shove a desk out of the way to get in, but there was nobody inside. At this hour of the night, much of the station was unoccupied, and Tia had drawn up our path very carefully with the goal of minimizing the chances that we'd run into anyone. After we crawled through, Megan took something from the pack and placed it on the wall beside the hole I'd made. It had a small red light that blinked ominously. We were to place explosive charges beside each hole we created so that when we detonated the building, it would be impossible to find out about the tensors from the wreckage.
Keep moving, Cody said. Every minute y'all are in there is a minute longer that somebody might wander into a room and wonder where all those bloody holes came from.
I'm on it,
I said, sliding my finger across my mobile screen and bringing up Tia's map. If we continued straight ahead through three rooms, we'd reach an emergency stairwell with fewer security cameras. We could avoid those, hopefully, by looping through some walls and moving up two floors. Then, we needed to make our way into the main storage chamber for energy cells. We'd set the rest of our charges, steal a power cell or two, and bolt.
Are you talking to yourself?
Megan asked, watching the door, her gun at chest level and arm straight and ready.
Tell her you're listening to ear demons, Cody suggested. Always works for me.
Cody is on the line, I said, working on the next wall. Giving me a delightful running commentary, and telling me about ear demons.
That almost provoked a smile from her.
I swore I saw one, for a moment at least.
Ear demons are totally real, Cody said. They're what make microphones like these ones work. They're also what tell you to eat the last slice of pie when you know Tia wanted it. Hold for a second. I'm patching you into the security system. And there's someone coming down the hall. Hold.
I froze, then hastily quieted the tensor.
Yeah, they're entering that room next to you, Cody said. Lights were already on. Might be someone else in it, too. Can't tell from the security feed. Y'all might have just dodged a bullet. Or rather, dodged having to dodge quite a few of them.
What do we do? I asked tensely. About Cody?
Megan asked, frowning.
Cody, could you just patch her in too? I asked, exasperated.
You really want to talk about her cleavage when she's on the line?
Cody asked innocently.
No, I mean, don't talk about that at all.
Fine. Megan, there's someone in the next room.
Options? She asked, calm.
We can wait, but the lights were already on. My guess is some late-night scientist still working.
Megan raised her gun.
I said. No, lass, Cody said. You know how Prof feels about that. Shoot guards if you have to. Nobody else.
The plan included pulling an alarm and evacuating the building before we detonated our charges. I wouldn't have to shoot the people next door, Megan said calmly.
And what else would you do, lass? Cody asked. Knock them out, then leave them for when we blow up the building?
Megan hesitated.
Okay, Cody said. Tia says there's another way. You're going to have to go up an elevator shaft, though.
Lovely, Megan said. We hurried back to the first room we'd come through. Tia uploaded a new map for me, with tensor points, and I got to work. I was a little more nervous this time. Were we going to find random scientists and workers just hanging around all over? What would we do if someone surprised us? What if it was some innocent custodian? For the first time in my life, I found myself nearly as worried about what I might end up doing as I was about what someone might do to me. It was an uncomfortable situation. What we were doing was basically terrorism. But we're the good guys, I told myself, breaking open the wall and letting Megan slide through first. Of course, what terrorist didn't think he or she was the good guy? We were doing something important, but what would that matter to the family of the cleaning woman we accidentally killed? As I hastened through the next darkened room, this one was a lab chamber with some breakers and other glasswork set up, I had trouble shaking off these questions. And so I focused on Steelheart, that awful, hateful sneer, standing there with the gun he'd taken from my father, barrel pointed down at the inferior human. That image worked. I could forget everything else when I thought of it. I didn't have all the answers, but at least I had a goal. Revenge. Who cared if it would eat me up inside and leave me hollow, so long as it drove me to make life better for everyone else? Prof understood that. I understood it too. We reached the elevator shaft without incident, entering it through a storage room that bordered it. I vaporized a large hole in the wall, and then Megan poked her head in and looked up the tall, dark shaft.
So, Cody, there's supposed to be a way up?
Sure. Handholds on the sides. They put them in all elevator shafts.
Looks like someone forgot to inform Steelheart of that, I said, looking in beside Megan. These walls are completely slick. No ladder or anything like that. No ropes or cords either. Cody cursed.
So we're back to going the other way? Megan asked.
I scanned the walls again. The blackness seemed to extend forever above and below us. We could wait for the elevator to come.
The elevators have cameras, Cody said.
So we ride on top of it, I said. And alert the people inside when we drop onto it? Megan asked.
We just wait for one that doesn't have anyone in it, I said. Elevators are empty about half the time, right? They're responding to calls people make.
All right, Cody said. Prof and Abraham have hit a small snag, waiting for a room to clear out so they can move through. Prof says you have 5 minutes to wait. If nothing happens by then, we're scrapping the job.
Okay, I said, feeling a stab of disappointment.
I'm going to run some visuals for them, Cody said. I'll be offline from you for a bit. Call me if you need me. I'll watch the elevator. If it moves, I'll let you know.
The line clicked as Cody switched frequencies, and we started waiting. We both sat quietly, straining to hear any sounds of the elevator moving, though we'd never spot it before Cody did with his video feeds.
So, how often is it like this?
I asked after a few minutes of kneeling beside Megan, stuck in the room beside the hole I'd burrowed into the side of the elevator shaft.
Like what? She asked.
The waiting?
More than you'd think, she said. The jobs we do, they're often all about timing.
Good timing requires a lot of waiting around. She glanced at my hand, and I found that I'd been nervously tapping the side of the wall. I forced myself to stop.
You sit, she said, voice growing softer, and you wait. You go over and over the plan, picture it in your mind. Then it usually goes wrong anyway.
I eyed her suspiciously.
What?
She asked.
The thing you just said. It's exactly what I think, too.
So?
So if something usually goes wrong, why are you always on my back about improvising?
She grew thin-lipped.
No, I said. It's time you leveled with me, Megan. Not just about this mission, but about everything. What is with you? Why do you treat me like you hate me? You were the one who originally spoke up for me when I wanted to join. You sounded impressed with me at first. Prof might never have listened to my plan at all if you hadn't said what you did. But since then, you've acted like I was a gorilla at your buffet.
What?
Gorilla at your buffet. You know, eating all your food, making you annoyed, that kind of thing.
You're a very special person, David.
Yeah, I take a specialness pill each morning. Look, Megan, I'm not letting go of this. The whole time I've been with the Reckoners, it seems like I've been doing something that bothers you.
Well, what is it?
What made you turn on me like that?
She looked away.
Is it my face? I asked. Because that's the only thing I can think of. I mean, you were all for me after the fortuity hit. Maybe it's my face. I don't think it's too bad a face, as far as faces go, but it does look kind of stupid sometimes when I...
It's not your face, she interrupted.
I didn't think it was, but I need you to talk to me.
Say something.
Because I think you're hotter than hell, and I can't understand what went wrong.
Fortunately, I stopped myself from saying that part out loud. I also kept my eyes straight at her head, just in case Cody was watching in. She said nothing.
Well,
I prompted.
5 minutes is up, she said, checking her mobile. I'm not going to let this go so easily. This-
5 minutes is up, Cody suddenly said, cutting in. Sorry, kids. This mission is a bust. Nobody is moving the elevators.
Can't you send one for us? I asked.
Cody chuckled.
We're tapped into the security feed, lad, but that's a far cry from being able to control things in the building. If Tia could hack us in that far, we could blow the building from the inside by overpowering the plants or something.
Oh. I looked up the cavernous shaft. It resembled an enormous throat stretching upward, one we needed to get up, which made us...
Bad analogy, very bad. Regardless, there was a twisting feeling in my gut. I hated the idea of backing down. Above lay the path to destroying Steelheart. Behind lay more waiting, more planning. I'd been planning for years.
Oh no, Megan said.
What?
I said absently.
You're going to improvise, aren't you?
I reached out into the shaft with the hand that wore the tensor, pressed it flat against the wall, and began a small vibrative burst. Abraham had taught me to make bursts of different sizes. He said that a master with the tensors could control the vibrations, leaving patterns or even shapes in your target. I pushed my hand hard, flat, feeling the glove shake. It wasn't just the glove, though. It was my whole hand. That had confused me at first. It seemed like I was creating the power, not the glove. The glove just helped shape the blast somehow. I couldn't fail at this. If I did, the operation was over. I should have felt stress at that, but I didn't. For some reason, I was realizing, when things got really, really tense, I found it easier to relax. Steelheart looming above my father, a gunshot. I would not back down. The glove vibrated. Dust fell away from the wall in a little patch around my hand. I slipped my fingers forward and felt what I'd done.
A handhold, Megan said softly, shining the light of her mobile.
What? Really?
Cody asked.
Turn on your camera, lass.
A moment later, he whistled.
You've been holding back on me, David. I didn't think you were nearly practiced enough to do something like that. I might have suggested it myself if I thought you could.
I moved my hand to the side and made another handhold, placing it beside the other in the shaft, just next to the hole in the wall. I made two more for my feet, then swung out of the hole in the wall and into the elevator shaft, placing my hands and feet in the handholds. I stretched up and made another set of holds above. I climbed up, rifle slung over my shoulder. I did not look down, but made another set of holds and continued. Climbing and carving with the tensor wasn't by any means easy, but I was able to shape the tensor blasts to leave a ridge at the front of each handhold, making them easy to grip.
"Can Prof and Abraham stall for a little longer?" Megan asked from below. "David seems to be working at a good clip, but it might take us about 15 minutes to get up."
"Tia's calculating," Cody said.
"Well, I'm going after David," Megan said.
She sounded muffled. I glanced over my shoulder. She'd wrapped a scarf around her face. The dust from the handholds. She doesn't want to breathe it in. Smart. I was having trouble avoiding it, and steel dust did not seem like a smart thing to inhale. Abraham said tensor dust wasn't as dangerous as it seemed, but I still didn't think it would be a good idea, so I ducked my head and held my breath each time I made a new hole.
"I'm impressed,"
a voice said in my ear. Prof's voice. It nearly made me leap in shock, which would have been a very bad thing. He must have patched into my visual feed with his mobile and could see the images made by the camera on my earpiece.
"Those holes are crisp and well-formed," Prof continued. "Keep at it, and you'll soon be as good as Abraham. You might already have passed up Cody."
"You sound worried about something," I said between making handholds.
"Not troubled, just surprised."
"It needed to be done,"
I said, grunting as I pulled myself up past another floor. Prof was silent for a few moments.
"That it did. Look, we can't have you extract down this same route. It will take too long, so you'll have to go out another way. Tia will let you know where. Wait for the first explosion."
"Affirmative," I said.
"And David,"
Prof added.
"Yeah?"
"Good work."
I smiled, pulling myself up again. We continued at it, climbing up the elevator shaft. I worried that the elevator would come down at some point, though if it did, it should miss us by a few inches. We were on the side of the shaft where there should have been a ladder. They just hadn't installed one. Perhaps Steelheart has watched the same movies that we have, I thought with a grimace as we finally passed the second floor. One more to go. My mobile clicked in my ear. I glanced at it on my wrist. Someone had muted our channel.
"I don't like what you've done to the team,"
Megan called up, her voice muffled. I glanced over my shoulder at her. She wore the backpack with our equipment in it, and her nose and mouth were covered with the scarf. Those eyes of hers glared at me, softly lit by the glow of the mobile strapped to her forearm. Beautiful eyes, peeking out above the shroud of a scarf, with a huge black pit stretching behind her. "Whoa," I lurched woozily.
"Slants," she called. "Stay focused."
"You're the one who said something," I whispered, turning back around. "What do you mean you don't like what I did to the team?"
"Before you showed up, we were going to move out of New Cago," Megan said from below. "Hit Fortuity, then leave. You made us stay."
I continued climbing.
"But, oh, just shut up and let me talk for once."
I shut up.
"I joined the Reckoners to kill epics who deserved it," Megan continued. "New Cago is one of the safest, most stable places in the entire Fractured States. I don't think we should be killing Steelheart, and I don't like how you've hijacked the team to fight your own personal war against him. He's brutal, yes, but he's doing a better job than most epics. He doesn't deserve to die."
The words stunned me. She didn't think we should kill Steelheart? He didn't deserve to die? It was insanity. I resisted the urge to look down again.
"Can I talk now?"
I asked, making another pair of handholds.
"Okay, fine."
"Are you crazy? Steelheart is a monster."
"Yes, I'll admit that. but he's an effective monster. Look, what are we doing today?
Destroying a power plant.
And how many cities out there still have power plants? She asked. Do you even know?
I kept climbing.
I grew up in Portland, she said. Do you know what happened there?
I did, though I didn't say. It hadn't been good.
The turf wars between epics left the city in ruins, Megan continued, her voice softer now. There is nothing left, David. Nothing. All of Oregon is a wasteland. Even the trees are gone. There aren't any power plants, sewage treatment plants, or grocery stores. That was what New Cago would have become if Steelheart hadn't stepped in.
I continued climbing, sweat tickling the back of my neck. I thought about the change in Megan. She'd grown cold toward me right after I'd first talked about taking down Steelheart. The times when she'd treated me the worst had been when we'd been making breakthroughs, when we'd gone to fetch my plans, and when I'd found out how to kill Nightwielder. It hadn't been my improvising that had set her against me. It had been my intentions, my successes in getting the team to target Steelheart.
I don't want to be the cause of something like Portland happening again, Megan continued. Yes, Steelheart is terrible, but he's a kind of terrible that people can live with.
So why haven't you quit? I asked. Why are you here?
Because I'm a reckoner, she said. And it's not my job to contradict Prof. I'll do my job, Knees. I'll do it well. But this time, I think we're making a mistake.
She was using that nickname of hers for me again. It actually seemed like a good sign, as she only seemed to use it when she was less annoyed at me. It was kind of affectionate, wasn't it? I just wished the nickname hadn't been a reference to something so embarrassing. Why not Super Great Shot? That kind of rolled off the tongue, didn't it? We climbed the rest of the way in silence. Megan turned our audio feed to the rest of the team back on, which seemed an indication that she thought the conversation was over. Maybe it was. I certainly didn't know what else to say. How could she possibly think that living under Steelheart was a good thing? I thought of the other kids at the factory, of the people in the understreets. I guessed that many of them thought the same way. They'd come here knowing that Steelheart was a monster, but they still thought life was better in New Cago than in other places. Only they were complacent. Megan was anything but that. She was active, incredible, capable. How could she think like they did? It shook what I knew of the world, at least what I thought I knew. The Reckoners were supposed to be different. What if she was right?
Oh, Sparks, Cody suddenly said in my ear.
What? Y'all have got trouble, lad. It's...
At that moment, the doors to the elevator shaft just above, the ones on the third floor, slid open. Two uniformed guards stepped up to the ledge and peered down into the darkness.
22.
I'm telling you, I heard something,
one of the guards said, squinting downward. He seemed to be looking right at me, but it was dark in the elevator shaft, darker than I'd thought it would be with the doors open.
I don't see anything,
the other said, his voice echoed softly. The first pulled his flashlight off his belt.
My heart lurched. Uh-oh.
I pressed my hand against the wall. It was the only thing I could think to do. The tensor started vibrating, and I tried to concentrate, but it was hard with them up there. The flashlight clicked.
See? Hear that?
Sounds like the furnace, the second guard said dryly. My hand rattling against the side of the wall did have a kind of mechanical sound to it. I grimaced but kept on. The light of the flashlight shone in the shaft. I nearly lost control of the vibration. There was no way they would have missed seeing me with that light. They were too close.
Nothing there, the guard said with a grunt.
What? I looked up. Somehow, despite being only a short distance away, it seemed they hadn't seen me. I frowned, confused.
Huh, the other guard said. I do hear a sound, though.
It's coming from, you know,
the first guard said.
Oh, the other said. Right.
The first guard stuffed the flashlight back into place on his belt. How could he have missed seeing me? He shined it right in my direction. The two backed away from the opening and let the doors slide shut. What in calamity's fires? I thought. Could they have actually missed us in the darkness? My tensor went off. I'd been preparing to vaporize a pocket into the wall to hide in, get us out of their line of fire if it came to that. But because I wasn't focusing the blast, I took a large chunk out of the wall in front of me, and in an instant my handhold disappeared. I grabbed at the side of the hole I'd made, barely finding a grip. A burst of dust fell back over me and cascaded over Megan in an enormous shower. Holding tight to the side of the hole, I glanced down to find her glaring up at me, blinking dust from her eyes. Her hand actually seemed to be inching toward her gun. Calamity, I thought with a start. Her scarf and skin were dusted silver, and her eyes were angry. I don't think I'd ever seen an expression like that in a person's eyes before, not directed at me at least. It was like I could feel the hate coming off her. Her hand kept inching toward the handgun at her side. Megan? I asked. Her hand stopped. I didn't know what I'd seen, but it was gone in a moment. She blinked and her expression softened. You need to watch what you're destroying, Knees, she snapped, reaching up to wipe some of the dust off her face. Yeah, I said, then looked back up into the hole I was hanging on to. Hey, there's a room here. I raised my mobile, shining light into it to get a better look. It was a small room, a few orderly desks outfitted with computer terminals lined one wall, and filing cabinets ran along the other. There were two doors, one a reinforced metal security door with a keypad. Megan, there's definitely a room here, and it doesn't look like there's anyone in it. Come on. I pulled myself up and crawled through. As soon as I was in, I helped Megan up and out of the shaft. She hesitated before taking my hand. Then, once she was out, she walked past me without a word. She seemed to have gone back to being cold toward me, maybe even a little mean. I knelt beside the hole back into the elevator shaft. I couldn't shake the feeling that something very strange had just happened. First the guard hadn't seen us, then Megan went from opening up to me to totally closing off in seconds flat. Was she having second thoughts about what she'd shared with me? Was she worried I'd tell Prof that she didn't support killing Steelheart? What is this place? Megan said from the center of the small room. The ceiling was low enough that she almost had to stoop. I would definitely have to. She unwrapped her scarf, releasing a puff of metal dust, grimaced, and then began shaking out her clothing. No idea, I said, checking my mobile and the map Tia had uploaded. The room's not on the map. Low ceilings, Megan said. Security door with a code. Interesting. She tossed her pack to me. Put an explosive on the hole you made. I'll check things out here. I fished in the pack for an explosive as she cracked open the door that didn't have the security pad and then stepped through. I attached the small device to the hole I'd made, then noticed some exposed wires in the lower part of the wall. I followed them down and was prying up a section of the floor when Megan came back. There are two other rooms like this, she said. No people in them. Small and built up against the elevator shaft. Best I can figure, this is where furnace equipment and elevator maintenance is supposed to be. But they hid some rooms here instead and took them off the building schematics. I wonder if there's space between other floors, if there are rooms hidden there too. Look at this, I said, pointing at what I'd discovered. She knelt beside me and eyed the wall and the wiring. Explosives, she said. The room's already set to blow, I said. Creepy, eh? Whatever is in here, Megan said, it must be important. Important enough that it's worth destroying the entire power plant to keep it from being discovered. We both looked up at the computers
What are you two doing?
Cody's voice came back onto our feed.
We found this room, I said, and...
Keep moving,
Cody said, cutting me off.
Prof and Abraham just ran into some guards and were forced to shoot them. The guards are down, bodies hidden, but they'll be missed soon. If we're lucky, we'll have a few minutes before someone realizes they're not on their patrol anymore.
I cursed, fishing in my pocket.
What's that? Megan asked.
One of the universal blasting caps I got from Diamond, I said. I want to see if they work.
I nervously used my electrical tape to stick the little round nub on the explosives we'd found under the floor. In my pocket, I carried its detonator, the one that looked like a pen.
By the map Tia gave us, Megan said, we're only two rooms over from the storage area with the energy cells, but we're a little below it.
We shared a glance, then split up to scour the hidden room. We might not have much time, but we needed to at least try to find out what information this place contained. She pulled open a filing cabinet and grabbed a handful of folders. In an instant, I was up and opening desk drawers. One had a couple of data chips. I grabbed them, waved them at Megan, then tossed them in her bag. She threw the folders in, then searched another desk while I raised a hand to the right wall and made us a hole. Since the hidden room was halfway between two floors, I wasn't certain how that related to the rest of the building. I made a hole in the wall in the direction we wanted to go, but I made it near the ceiling. That opened up into a room on the third floor, but near the floor. So there was some overlap between our hidden room and the third floor. With a glance at the map, I could see how they'd hidden the room. On the schematics, the elevator shaft was shown as slightly bigger than it actually was. It also included a maintenance shaft that wasn't actually there. And that explained the lack of handholds in the elevator. The builders assumed the maintenance shaft would provide a way to service the elevator, not knowing that the hidden room would actually go in that space. Megan and I climbed through the hole and onto the third floor. We crossed that room, a conference room of some sort, and passed through another, which was a monitoring station. I vaporized the wall and opened a hole into a long, low-ceilinged storage area. This was our target, the room where the power cells were kept.
We're in, Megan said to Cody as we slipped inside.
The room was filled with shelves, and on them were various pieces of electrical equipment, none of which we wanted. We went in different directions, searching hastily.
Awesome, Cody said. The power cells should be in there somewhere. Look for cylinders about a hand span wide and about as tall as a boot.
I spied some large storage lockers on the far wall, with locks on the doors.
Might be in here, I said to Megan, moving toward them.
I made quick work of the locks with the tensor and pulled the doors open as she joined me. Inside one was a tall column of green cylinders stacked on top of one another on their sides. Each cylinder looked vaguely like a cross between a very small beer keg and a car battery.
Those are the power cells, Cody said, sounding relieved. I was half worried there wouldn't be any. Good thing I brought my four-leaf clover on this operation.
Four-leaf clover?
Megan said with a snort as she fished something out of her pack.
Sure, from the homeland.
That's the Irish, Cody, not the Scottish.
I know, Cody said without missing a beat. I had to kill an Irish dude to get mine.
I pulled out one of the power cells.
They aren't as heavy as I thought they'd be, I said. Are we sure these will have enough juice to power the Gauss gun? That thing needs a lot of energy.
Those cells were charged by conflux,
Cody said in my ear.
They're more powerful by magnitudes than anything we could make or buy. If they won't work, nothing will. Grab as many as you can carry.
They might not have been as heavy as I thought, but they were still kind of bulky. We took the rest of the equipment out of Megan's pack, then retrieved the smaller sack we had stuffed in the bottom. I managed to stuff four of the cells in the pack, while Megan transferred the rest of our equipment, a few explosive charges, some rope, and some ammunition, to her smaller sack. There were also some lab coats for disguises. I left these out. I suspected we'd need them to escape.
How are Prof and Abraham? I asked.
On their way out,
Cody said. And our extraction? I asked. Prof said we shouldn't go back down the elevator shaft.
You have your lab coats?
Cody asked. Sure, Megan said. But if we go in the hallways, they might record our faces.
That's a risk we'll have to take, Cody said. First explosion is a go in 2 minutes.
We threw on the lab coats, and I squatted down and let Megan help me put on the backpack with the power cells. It was heavy, but I could still move reasonably well. Megan threw on her lab coat. It looked good on her, but pretty much anything would. She swung her own lighter pack over her shoulder, then eyed my rifle.
It can be disassembled, I explained, as I pulled the stock from the rifle, then popped out the magazine and removed the cartridge from the chamber.
I slid on the safety just in case, then stuffed the pieces in her sack. The coats were embroidered with Station 7's logo, and we both had fake security badges to go with them. The disguises would never have worked getting us in. Security was far too tight. But in a moment of chaos, they should get us out. The building shook with an ominous rumble. Explosion number one. That was mostly to prompt an evacuation, rather than to inflict any real damage.
Go!
Cody yelled in our ears. I vaporized the lock on the door to the room, and the two of us burst out into the hallway. People were peeking out of doors. It seemed to be a busy floor, even at night. Some of the people were cleaning staff in blue overalls, but others were technicians in lab coats.
Explosion!
I did my best to seem panicked.
Someone's attacking the building!
The chaos started immediately, and we were soon swept up into the crowd, fleeing from the building. About 30 seconds later, Cody triggered the second explosion on an upper floor. The ground trembled, and people in the hallway around us screamed, glancing at the ceiling. Some of the dozen or so people clutched small computers or briefcases. There wasn't actually anything to be frightened of. These initial explosions had been set in unpopulated locations that wouldn't bring down the building. There would be four of those early blasts, and they'd been placed to shepherd all the civilians out of the structure. Then the real explosions could begin. We made a hasty flight through hallways and down stairwells, being careful to keep our heads down. Something felt odd about the place, and as we ran, I realized what it was. The building was clean. The floors, the walls, the rooms. Too clean. It had been too dark for me to notice it when we were making our way in, but in the light, it seemed stark to me. The understreets weren't ever this clean. It didn't feel right for everything to be so scrubbed, so neat. As we ran, it became clear that the place was big enough that any one employee wouldn't know everyone else who worked there. And though our intelligence said that the security officers had the faces of all employees in portfolios that they checked against security feeds, no one challenged us. Most of the security officers were running with the growing crowd, just as worried about the explosions as everyone else, and that dampened my fears even more. As a group, we flooded down the last flight of stairs and burst out into the lobby.
What's going on?
A security officer yelled. He was standing by the exit with his gun out and aimed.
Did anyone see anything?
An epic, Megan said breathlessly. We're in green. I saw him walking through the building, throwing out blasts of energy.
The third explosion went off, shaking the building. It was followed by a series of smaller explosions. Other groups of people flooded out of adjacent stairwells and from the ground floor hallways. The guard cursed, then did the smart thing. He ran too. He wouldn't be expected to face an epic. Indeed, he could get in trouble for doing it, even if that epic was working against Steelheart. Ordinary men left epics alone, end of story. In the fractured states, that was a law greater than any other. We burst out of the building and onto the grounds. I glanced back to see trails of smoke rising from the enormous structure. Even as I watched, another series of small explosions went off in an upper row of windows, each one flashing green. Prof and Abraham hadn't just planted bombs. They'd planted a light show.
It is an epic, a woman near me breathed. Who would be so foolish?
I flashed a smile at Megan, and we joined the flood of people running to the gates in the wall surrounding the grounds. The guards there tried to hold people in,
But when the next explosion went off, they gave up and opened the gates. Megan and I followed the others out into the dark streets of the city, leaving the smoldering building behind.
Security cameras are still up, Cody reported on the open channel to everyone. Building is still evacuating. Hold the last explosions,
Prof said calmly.
But blow the leaflets.
There was a soft pop from behind, and I knew that the leaflets proclaiming that a new epic had come to town had been blasted from the upper floors and were floating down to the city. Limelight, we were calling him, the name I'd chosen. The flyer was filled with propaganda calling Steelheart out, claiming that Limelight was the new master of Newcago. Megan and I were to our car before Cody gave the all clear. I climbed in the driver's side, and Megan followed through the same door, shoving me over into the passenger seat.
I can drive, I said.
You destroyed the last car going around one block, Knees, she said, starting the vehicle. Knocked down two signs, I believe, and I think I saw the remains of some trash cans as we fled. There was a faint smile on her lips.
Wasn't my fault,
I said, thrilled by her success as I looked back at Station 7 rising into the dark sky.
Those trash cans were totally asking for it. Cheeky slances.
I'm triggering the big one,
Cody said in my ear. A line of blasts sounded in the building, including the explosives Megan and I had placed. I guessed. The building shook, fires burning out the windows.
Huh, Cody said, confused. Didn't bring it down. Good enough,
Prof answered.
Evidence of our incursion is gone, and the station won't be operating anytime soon.
Yeah,
Cody said. I could hear the disappointment in his voice.
I just wish it had been a little more dramatic.
I pulled the pen detonator from my pocket. It probably wouldn't do anything. The explosives we'd placed on the walls had probably already set off the ones in the floor. I clicked the top of the pen anyway. The following explosion was about 10 times as strong as the previous one. Our car shook and debris sprayed out over the city, dust and bits of rock raining down. Megan and I both spun around in our seats in time to catch the building collapse and an awful sounding crunch.
Wow,
Cody said.
Look at that. I guess some of the power cells went up.
Megan glanced at me, then at the pin, then rolled her eyes. In seconds, we were racing down the street in the opposite direction of fire trucks and emergency responders, heading for the rendezvous point with the other reckoners. Part 3. 23. I grunted, hauling the rope hand over hand. A plaintive squeak came from the pulley system with each draw, as if I had strapped some unfortunate mouse to a torture device and was twisting with glee. The construction had been set up around the tunnel into the Reckoner Burrow, which was the only way in or out. It had been 5 days since our attack on the power station, and we'd been lying low during most of that, planning our next move. The hit on Conflux to undermine enforcement. Abraham had just gotten back from a supply run, which meant that I'd stopped being one of the team's tensor specialists and started being their source of free teenage labor. I continued pulling, sweat dripping from my brow and beginning to soak through my t-shirt. Eventually, the crate appeared from the depths of the hole, and Megan pulled it off its rollers and heaved it into the room. I let go of the rope, sending the roller board and rope back down the tunnel so Abraham could tie on another crate of supplies.
You want to do the next one?
I asked Megan, wiping my brow with a towel.
No,
she said lightly. She heaved the crate onto a dolly and wheeled it over to stack it with the others.
You sure?
I asked, arms aching.
You're doing such a fine job, she said. And it's good exercise.
She settled the crate, then sat down on a chair, putting her feet up on the desk and sipping a lemonade while reading a book on her mobile. I shook my head. She was unbelievable.
Think of it as being chivalrous,
Megan said absently, tapping the screen to scroll down more text.
Protecting a defenseless girl from pain and all that.
Defenseless? I asked as Abraham called up. I sighed, then started pulling the rope again. She nodded. In an abstract way.
How can someone be abstractly defenseless?
Takes a lot of work, she said, then sipped her drink. It only looks easy, just like abstract art. I grunted.
Abstract art? I asked, heaving on the rope.
Sure, you know. Guy paints a black line on a canvas, calls it a metaphor, sells it for millions.
That never happened.
She looked up at me, amused. Sure it did. You never learned about abstract art in school?
I was schooled at the factory, I said. Basic math, reading, geography, history. Wasn't time for anything else.
But before that, before Calamity.
I was 8, I said, and I lived in inner city Chicago, Megan. My education mostly involved learning to avoid gangs and how to keep my head down at school.
That's what you learned when you were 8? In grade school?
I shrugged and kept pulling.
She seemed troubled by what I'd said, though I'll admit, I was troubled by what she'd said. People hadn't really paid that much money for such simple things, had they? It baffled me. Pre-Calamity people had been a strange lot.
I hauled the next crate up, and Megan hopped down from her chair again to move it. I couldn't imagine that she was getting much reading done, but she didn't seem bothered by the interruptions.
I watched her, taking a long gulp from my cup of water. Things had been different between us since her confession in the elevator shaft. In a lot of ways, she was more relaxed around me, which didn't make that much sense. Shouldn't things have been more awkward? I knew she didn't support our mission. That felt like a pretty big deal to me. She really was a professional, though. She didn't agree that Steelheart should be killed, but she didn't abandon the Reckoners or even ask for a transfer to another Reckoner cell. I didn't know how many of those there were. Apparently only Tia and Prof knew, but there was at least one other. Either way, Megan stayed on board and didn't let her feelings distract her from her job. She might not agree that Steelheart needed to die, but from what I'd pried from her, she believed in fighting the epics. She was like a soldier who believed a certain battle wasn't tactically sound, yet supported the generals enough to fight it anyway. I respected her for that. Sparks. I was liking her more and more. And though she hadn't been particularly affectionate toward me lately, she wasn't openly hostile and cold any longer. That left me room to work some seductive magic. I wished I knew some. She got the crate in place, and I waited for Abraham to call up that I should start pulling again. Instead, he appeared at the mouth of the tunnel and started to unhook the pulley system. His shoulder had been healed from the gunshot using the harm sway, the Reckoner device that helped flesh heal extraordinarily fast. I didn't know much about it, though I'd spoken to Cody. He'd called it the last of the three. Three bits of incredible technology brought to the Reckoners from Prof's days as a scientist. The tensors, the jackets, the harm sway. From what Abraham told me, Prof had developed each technology and then stolen them from the lab he'd worked in, intent on starting his own war against the epics. Abraham got the last part of the pulley down. Are we done? I asked.
Indeed.
I counted more crates than that.
The others are too big to fit through the tunnel, Abraham said. Cody's going to drive them over to the hangar.
That was what they called the place where they kept their vehicles. I'd been there. It was a large chamber with a few cars and a van inside. It wasn't nearly as secure as this hideout was. The hangar had to have access to the upper city and couldn't be part of the understreets. Abraham walked over to the stack of a dozen crates we'd heaved into the hideout. He rubbed his chin, inspecting them.
We might as well unload these, he said. I've got another hour to spare.
Before what? I asked, joining him at the crates. He didn't reply. You've been gone a lot these last few days, I noted. Again, he didn't reply.
He's not going to tell you where he's been, Knees, Megan said from her lounging position at the desk.
And get used to it. Prof sends him out on secret errands a lot.
But, I said, feeling hurt, I thought I'd earned my place on the team.
Do not be saddened, David,
Abraham said, grabbing a crowbar to crack open one of the crates.
It is not a matter of trust. We must keep something secret, even within the team, should one of us be taken captive. Steelheart has his way of getting to what one hides. Nobody except Prof should know everything we are doing.
It was a good rationale, and it was probably why I couldn't know about other Reckoner's cells either. But it was still annoying. As Abraham cracked open another crate, I reached to the pouch at my side and slipped out my tensor. With that, I vaporized the wooden lids off a few crates. Abraham raised an eyebrow at me. What? I said. Cody told me to keep practicing.
You are growing quite good,
Abraham said. Then he reached into one of the crates I'd opened and fished out an apple, which was now covered in sawdust. It made something of a mess getting it out.
Quite good, he continued. But sometimes, the crowbar is more effective, eh? Besides, we may wish to reuse these crates.
I sighed, but nodded. It was just, well, hard. The sense of strength I'd felt during the power station infiltration was difficult to forget. Opening the holes in the walls and creating those handholds, I'd been able to bend matter to my will. The more I used the tensor, the more excited I grew about the possibilities it offered.
It is also important, Abraham said, to avoid leaving traces of what we can do. Imagine if everyone knew about these things, eh? It would be a different world, more difficult for us.
I nodded, reluctantly putting the tensor away. Too bad we had to leave that hole for Diamond to see. Abraham hesitated, just briefly.
Yes, he said. Too bad.
I helped him unload the supplies and Megan joined us, working with characteristic efficiency. She ended up doing a lot of supervising, telling us where to stow the various foodstuffs. Abraham accepted her direction without complaint, even though she was the junior member of the team. About halfway through the unloading, Prof came out of his planning room. He walked over to us while scanning through some papers in a folder.
Did you learn anything, Prof?
Abraham asked.
Rumors are going our way, for once,
Prof said, tossing the folder onto Tia's desk.
The city's buzzing with the news of a new epic come to challenge Steelheart. Half the city is talking about it, while the other half is bunkering down in their basements, waiting for the fighting to blow over.
That's great, I said.
Yes.
Prof seemed troubled. What's wrong then? I asked. He tapped the folder.
Did Tia tell you what was on those data chips you brought back from the power plant?
I shook my head, trying to hide my curiosity. Was he going to tell me? Perhaps it would give me a clue to what Abraham had been up to the last few days.
It's propaganda,
Prof said.
We think you found a hidden public manipulation wing of Steelheart's government. The files you brought back included press releases, outlines of rumors planned to be started, and stories of things Steelheart has done. Most of those stories and rumors are false, so far as Tia can determine. You wouldn't be the first ruler to fabricate a grand history for himself,
Abraham noted, stowing some canned chicken on one of the shelves that had been carved to fill the entire wall of the back room. But why would Steelheart need to do that? I asked, wiping my brow. I mean, he's practically immortal. It's not like he needs to look more powerful than he is.
He's arrogant, Abraham said. Everybody knows this. You can see it in his eyes, in how he speaks, in what he does. Yes,
Prof said.
Which is why these rumors are so confusing. The stories aren't meant to bolster him, or if they are, he has an odd way of going about it. Most of the stories are about atrocities he's committed, people he's murdered, buildings, even small towns he has supposedly wiped out. But none of it has actually happened.
He's spreading rumors about having slaughtered towns full of people? Megan asked, sounding troubled.
So far as we can tell,
Prof said. He joined in, helping unload the crates. Megan had stopped giving orders, I noticed, now that he was around.
Someone, at least, wants Steelheart to sound more terrible than he really is.
Maybe we found some kind of revolutionary group, I said, eager.
Doubtful,
Prof said.
Inside one of the major government buildings? With that kind of security? Besides, what you told me seems to imply the guards knew of the place. Anyway, many of these stories are accompanied by documentation claiming they were devised by Steelheart himself. It even notes their falsehood and the need to substantiate them with made-up facts.
He's been bragging, Abraham said, and making things up. Only now, his ministry has to make all of his claims sound true. Otherwise, he'll look foolish.
Prof nodded, and my heart sank. I'd assumed that we'd found something important. Instead, all I'd discovered was a department dedicated to making Steelheart look good, and more evil, or something.
So Steelheart is not as terrible as you would like us to think, Abraham said.
Oh, he's pretty terrible,
Prof said.
Wouldn't you say, David?
Over 17,000 confirmed deaths to his name, I said absently. It's in my notes. Many were innocents. They can't all be fabrications.
And they're not,
Prof said.
He's a terrible, awful individual. He just wants to make sure that we all know it.
How strange, Abraham said. I dug into a crate of cheeses, getting out the paper-wrapped blocks and loading them in the cold storage pit on the far side of the room. So many of the foods the Reckoners ate were things I'd never been able to afford. Cheese, fresh fruit. Most food in Newcago had to be shipped in because of the darkness. It was impossible to grow fruit and vegetables outside, and Steelheart was careful to keep a firm hold on the farmland surrounding the city. Expensive foods? I was already getting used to eating them. Odd how quickly that could happen. Prof, I said, placing a cheese wheel in the pit. Do you ever wonder if maybe Newcago will be worse without Steelheart than it is with him? At the other side of the room, Megan turned sharply to look at me, but I didn't look at her. I won't tell him what you said, so stop glaring at me. I just want to know.
It probably will be,
Prof said.
For a while, at least. The infrastructure of the city will probably collapse. Food will get scarce. Unless someone powerful takes Steelheart's place and secures enforcement. There will be looting.
But...
You want your revenge, son? Well, that's the cost. I won't sugarcoat it. We try to keep from hurting innocents, but when we kill Steelheart, we'll cause suffering.
I sat down beside the cold storage hole.
Did you never think of this?
Abraham asked. He'd gotten that necklace out from underneath his shirt and was rubbing his finger on it.
In all those years of planning, preparing to kill the one you hated, did you never consider what would happen to Newcago?
I blushed, but then I shook my head. I hadn't. So, what do we do?
Continue as we have,
Prof said.
Our job is to cut out the infected flesh. Only then can the body start to heal. But it's going to hurt a lot first.
But, Prof turned to me, and I saw something in his expression. A deep exhaustion. The tiredness of one who had been fighting a war for a long, long time.
It's good for you to think of this, son. Ponder. Worry. Stay up nights, frightened for the casualties of your ideology. It will do you good to realize the price of fighting. I need to warn you of something, however. There aren't any answers to be found. There are no good choices. Submissiveness to a tyrant, or chaos and suffering. In the end, I choose the second, though it flays my soul to do so. If we don't fight, humankind is finished. We slowly become sheep to the epics, slaves and servants, stagnant. This isn't just about revenge or payback. It's about the survival of our race. It's about men being the masters of their own destiny. I choose suffering and uncertainty over becoming a lapdog.
That's all well and good, Megan said, to choose for yourself.
But Prof,